You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. OneOfUs.net and all of the shows on it are 100% subscriber supported. Please consider becoming a subscriber to OneOfUs.net. Keep the site and all of our great shows going and get some terrific bonus content as well.
Mediocrity excels while brilliance is repelled by the people who control art, like a man in an elevator controls the room with his fart. Obscurity.
You know, I think you got something there. It's rhyming, and that's something that good poets have. But I think you need to talk more about your gay lover and you know, I don't know, New England, something about that. Yeah.
Well, if you understood poetry, clearly you don't, you would know that that's exactly what I was talking about.
You know, I think you got to use some more simple metaphors and maybe something about a man from Nantucket. That's the ones I get behind.
Well, what's a metaphor?
It's about 350.
Yeah, you need about 350. Anyways.
We don't have any way to lead into this story about Emily Dickinson and more honestly a look at her life as she actually was, as opposed to kind of the way she's been portrayed for large amounts of her history in the world.
Absolutely. Me personally, as you can see, I don't know anything about poetry. And I have the confidence to pretend like I do. I know Emily Dickinson solely. All the information I know about her is from a Simpson episode when Lisa was at that Marine boot camp. Was like a military school. So she's all alone, like, you know, like a recluse. And she's like, it's okay that I'm all by myself all the time. Lots of brilliant people were all alone, like Emily Dickinson.
Except for she wasn't.
Right. Mind blown.
This is a movie that's kind of been sitting on a shelf for a little while here. I actually had the chance to see it about 2 years ago at South by Southwest, which, you know, I was like, oh, an interesting history of Emily Dickinson. It's like, and about her and her life with her gay lover. I'm like, oh, well, I didn't know that part about Emily Dickinson. Okay. This could be very interesting, especially with the cast like Molly Shannon as the title character.
Yeah. And knowing nothing about Emily Dickinson other than that silly Simpsons reference, I thought, of course, Molly Shannon is so funny and she's so charming and she makes these flawed characters with deep running insanity so much fun. This will be a real hoot.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I thought too at the time. And you kind of come to find, well, this is definitely a comedy. There's a fair amount of levity to this movie. It's actually a pretty good character study and like history of this person. Kind of surprisingly at a lot of points too, where Molly Shannon is kind of the most grounded I've seen her in years in a movie. Like, she's not playing a character. She's playing a person with the depth of a person, as just maybe with some, you know, great facial work as well for comedy.
Absolutely. And I really am looking forward to and hoping it into existence that we're going to get like a Molly Shannessance where she's in more of these high profile films that are actually seen and, you know, spread around. She was the last thing I saw her in where I was blown away by how good a dramatic actor she is. And I don't know why I'm always surprised when a comedian is able to do that. It seems like that happens all the time. But it was a Private Life. And so, yeah, that was another reason why I jumped on this review to be able to watch this.
Exactly. And so this one, the story is of Emily Dickinson's life, kind of starting from a very young age. I mean, starts more present day with, honestly, a scene that is kind of laugh out loud funny with her, Molly Shannon as Emily Dickinson, and Susan Ziegler as Susan, who was her brother's wife, but also her longtime lover. And it's very funny as they're like, oh, it's been so long since I've seen you. And they do the kiss on the cheek and then pecks on the lips, and then all of a sudden they just start making out and just drop to the floor, and it's like, okay. Yeah, it's a good tone for this movie. It's actually quite hilarious. And then it kind of moves forward and shows actually kind of a history of their love, where basically, you know, they were kids in the Women's Shakespeare Club and reading poems, and honestly clearly have like the teenage equivalent of sexual tension going on there that no one else picks up on because they're all proper ladies except for these two children. And basically from there, they kind of started kissing and making out and then secretly spending weekends and weeks and months together as their families went out of town. And finally, Susan marries Emily's brother, Austin, just to be close to Emily and have an excuse to be near her and have the security to do that. And it's kind of, yeah, the full story of her life, including that she was, you know, Emily Dickinson was not the recluse we believe she was. Also that that whole story was made up by a woman who both admired her work, but also wanted the fame from it and realized the only way to get fame from Emily Dickinson was to tell a story that was more appropriate for that time period.
Yeah, it's a tale as old as time, you know, and when you rewrite history, you rewrite history forever, as they say. But not if more people see this movie. So that's why I think a film like this is very important.
Very much agree. And I found it very interesting, not to spoil things at the end, but they do hint on, and I mean, you can research this yourself, that Susan's daughter actually did know, like, or maybe her other children did as well, but Susan's daughter definitely knew that they were gay lovers. She was fine with it. She's like, this makes them happy. My dad's kind of a dick. It's cool. And tried to get that story out there. But the story of the reclusive poet who, you know, never found love, but always dreamed of it was, you know, so romanticized for the time that that's the only story that actually went. And it's kind of sad when you really think about it.
You know, sometimes it's like the world doesn't deserve a good love story. And that's why stories like this get buried, because we don't deserve it. Because going back to that, Susan and Emily as young kids, that conversation they have, you know, with each other about their feelings.
All right.
That was probably one of the most honest conversations I've heard in film from two teenagers that not just cared about each other as friends, but loved each other intimately and, you know, sexually. So right out the gate, it's, you know, how a lot of these stories go. It's not just, oh, women kissing, naughty, naughty, but, oh, my gosh, they're actually in love with each other. And I thought the balance act between clearly a hungry sexual desire they had for each other, but also a deep, intimate love that only dear friends can have was very well done from all the ages played by the Susan and Emily actresses.
Yeah, so, I gotta say, well, in general, I really do love this cast. Molly Shannon and Susan Siegler have such great chemistry together. They get their comedic tones and timing so perfect. There's that. I think Siegler has some of the funniest facial expressions reacting to some of the absurd things this movie puts forth. Like, it literally is just, it's not, as I said, it's not like a straight comedy where it's, you know, what you expect from Molly Shannon. It's right. A lot of things where it's situational and just, it's very much about how they react to those situations and kind of take them in earnest. Like, kind of what you think somebody with a real sense of humor would react to in these situations, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I love the scene. Was it Ralph Waldo Emerson that was visiting Susan? I think it was. And Emily was like, oh, I'd love to hear what Mr. Emerson has to say. And she comes to the door and he's mumbling out his poetry. But it's so great. It's just Molly Shannon standing there in the doorway. And she's like looking really furtively in. And then she like every once in a while gives a side eye to Susan. Like, this isn't just me, right? Like, you can't pick up anything you say. But he's so interesting. But what's going on? Like, I don't want to say it's muted humor, but it's very well done.
Yeah, it is. It's, you know, kind of, it's fun. The whole movie is fun. The soundtrack, or the score, I'll say, that accompanies this, it's light and feathery. And, you know, there's a bit of tragedy to it, like in all comedy, you know. So it all comes together so well in like this bouncy, you know, but not flighty, because these are serious issues we're getting into. But I think that's where it does succeed, not necessarily as a comedy, but as funny. When you take something serious, like this could have easily been a dry, you know, very sad, like
incredibly dry,
Emily and Susan could have turned away from each other several times and been like, it cannot be, you know, to like the swells of a very operatic piece. And that'd be fine. I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to try and dump on movies that do that. But this was, you know, two lovers who took the time they had together and literally made the most of it, you know, through right. their, you know, like lovers do, because love, no offense to any teenagers out there, love is actually fun, you know?
Yeah, and exactly.
This is where this succeeds very well.
And,
high marks.
And the moments where the characters fight, but where their relationship's a little bit strained are
yeah.
also played for good laughs. There's a moment where another yeah. woman comes to town when Emily felt slighted by Susan, and it's like the way that Susan's reacting to this and then Emily's reaction when Susan's mad at her is just like, yeah, that's kind of exactly how a relationship goes when you're like, really pissed off at the person you actually love. You're more just like, wait, why aren't you paying attention to me now? But then when they get back yeah. together, it's the cutest thing. The scenes when they're together are so great. I love that one in the early beginning where Emily comes with the Susan and she's like, I thought you were going to give me some poems today. He's like, oh, I've been so busy and nothing's quite good. She's like, well, give me the few things you have. And she starts pulling out like 40 different poems from different places. A little, and she's like, oh, in this one, in this one. And it's just like, Susan's like, fucker, you were lying to me this whole time. And it's, I also want to say, they explain how they could have hidden this for so long just by her brother Austin, who's I believe played by Kevin Seal, and also her sister Lavina, played by Jackie Monahan, just being such oblivious people. Like they're played off, and I'm sure this is not fully true, but they're played here at least as such buffoons. Where you know Austin is just a complete moron. He whenever he's like trying to get up to Susan to have sex, she's like, yeah, no, yeah. that's okay. And then you know Lavina's just a nut job. Which actually I have heard some stories that Lavina may not have been the most aware person, but she's obsessed with her cat. There's that great one at the end where towards the end where he's saying, oh, Mabel would love to meet Emily. He goes, does she know that Emily's a human? Because I do have a cat named Emily Dickinson. It's
yeah.
so stupidly funny.
Could you calm your cat down, please? Yeah, that's good stuff. What did you think of... and this gets at the heart of the art world. No, the poet world I was trying to make fun of and failed with my terrible poem that, well, maybe it could be published. I don't know. But Brett Gelman as Higginson that plays a publisher.
I'm a great huge role Brett for him fan too. To begin yeah. with.
Great role for him. But,
it's kind of one of those characters that's just like perfect for him to just start and just let him roll, because that's exactly yeah. the type of character he is. He's kind of pompous and kind of just completely unawares. And he's trying so hard to keep up in air without knowing what he's talking about.
Well, that's what I really liked about his character. He wasn't cruel, you know, like so many producers or publishers in these biopics are like, you'll never work in this town. I'll see to it that the world never knows you're trashy, you know, work. He was just kind of, well, I believe, let me help you now. This structure is all wrong. And he's mansplaining, yes. for lack of a better word, to one of the greatest poets of all time, how a poem should work. And he's so good at it. And then, you know, she burns him on his way out. But
yeah. I do love his first introduction too, when it was like, who is he? And it's him in the, like the Civil War, I believe it. And, it's like, he's like, so, you know, what is my experience? Well, you know, I was the editor and it's like, no, what's your experience in war? He goes, oh, in war. It's like, yeah, no, you just lie your way into everything and somehow yeah, yeah. you succeeded. And it,
the saying go? He has the amazing confidence that only mediocrity can bring, you know.
That's a great descriptor for it. I gotta say, I mean, you know, there's parts of this movie that kind of drag a bit. They try some extra artistic things with using Emily's poetry, which is lovely that they included, and they include some of the actual letters that Emily wrote to Susan in the unedited version, because they do mention at the end that these edits were found to be have been made using electrograph, I believe they said, to find the graphite remnants in the letters and such.
Science.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, those were nice. But then there's parts where there's, you know, really kind of like metaphysical poetry, one about sadness and the one about death, and you know, they're cool little vignettes, but it also kind of feels very out of place with the rest of the movie. I don't know if you felt the same about that, Brad.
No, I did. I hate to admit this. I hate to admit a lot of things and still do it. Maybe I don't hate to admit this. I sometimes need my handheld when narratives are jumping through time. It's one of the reasons why I can't follow This Is Us, because I don't recognize the wig changes. But yeah, during those scenes, you know, when she was, well, it was subtitled, then suddenly it wasn't, and then there was audio to it. And then I was literally thinking, dude, like, okay, so who's this guy she's with now? Is this someone we should know? And, you know, it wasn't. It was just kind of a weird narrative choice. And yeah, I sometimes I need my handheld, and that was a bit much.
I can agree. I mean, it's I can't fault them for wanting to do something creative with it, but they also only really start doing those ones that are really out of place with the narrative towards the end of the film. And it's like, you haven't built up to this. It doesn't hold that well together. The director of this movie, let's see, sorry, I have my IMDb up, but I'm terrible at scrolling at it when I'm talking. Madeline Olnick, she has a few other movies. I can't say I've seen any of them. And I feel like that's kind of part of this too. Is like, she's been very big on independent short films or smaller films. A lot of them definitely about, you know, lesbians and that, and you know, gender queer experience stuff, which is great.
Okay.
And I feel like that's partially why the relationship works so well here. But
She writes what she knows.
Yeah. Exactly. But it does show here, you know, this is more of an expansive movie, and it kind of felt like she was trying for something to, you know, really bring in this poetry that spoke to her at the end. And it just doesn't always hold together with the film.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
But yeah, do you want to go into final thoughts there, Brad?
All right, my final thoughts. I really enjoyed this movie. I'll be seeing it again, of course. Not a perfect film, like you said, and I did get lost on a couple sudden time jumps. The way it was structured, I did enjoy, though, how it was being told by the daughter about two grand lovers. And honestly, I think the goal that all these films should have is to make you want to learn more about its subject. The poem they choose to express her love for Susan, Emily's love for Susan, was so spot on. Like, I, of course, have no idea what it means to be a lesbian who has to hide, you know, and kind of tiptoe around the faults of society when it comes to loving another person. But reading that poem and how it was read during the scene, you know, I was texting my wife, get home now, I'll send the kids to the park, I love you, you know? So mm-hmm. It works very well. And I am very interested in, you know, reading more of Dickinson's work, since I had no idea what it was before, other than she was a famous poet. So it succeeds on that mark. I like that her muse, Susan, was shown to us and not told. You know, so many films about great artists, sure, they literally say, you know, like recently with Bohemian Rhapsody, he literally says the line, Mary is my muse, she's my flame. I write everything for Mary. It's like, well we don't need you to say that, Freddie. You know, everyone who knows Queen knows that you had an amazing friend named Mary. But anyways, I digress. Right. I'm going to give this 9 unpublished poems that would be amazing 10 years after her death.
Oh. I really did love this movie, just even maybe not as much as you necessarily did. I remember when Justin was wrangling us to get into this, I was like, yeah, I saw it 2 years ago, but I'd love a little refresher. So, you know, I got the screener as well. And, you know, I thought I'd just watch it half-heartedly to refresh, but it really does draw you in just because the performances and the characters really just work. They're really enjoyable, you know, and really heartfelt. It's definitely a movie I'm going to recommend to other people. Just in my family and my life, it's just like, this is a charming movie. It's, you know, it's a nice thing to watch on a weekend, or, you know, with somebody you love, for sure. And I actually do, I would love to be able to, you know, share with other people. Hopefully it will come out on DVD or Blu-ray at some point to make that easier. But yeah, overall, I'm going to give it, let's go with 8.5 out of 10 wonderful sing-alongs to the Yellow Rose of Texas.
Yeah.
That's one.
Well, me, I'm a sucker. I'm always a sucker for romance, even bad romance.
You're a big sucker for Lady Gaga, then?
Yeah, you knew where I was going with that.
I wonder if Emily Dickinson would like Lady Gaga. She doesn't rhyme that much, so she must be a skilled poet.
Oh, yeah, I think they would adore each other.
Especially that meat suit. I mean, Because she couldn't imagine that it much meat back in the 1900s.
Meat suit, meat cute.
And on that, good night, folks.